Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me this afternoon is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
Yes, indeed, we live and we continue to podcast. We were not snapped away, although some may have thought that might have been an option. We were not teleported to another multiverse. We were, in fact, just living normal, busy lives. So this is about the first time in about a month we've been able to sit down together and talk about movies, and so we are going to do that today. As I said, I'm one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me is Chad Metz, and we're going to talk some movies. So, Chad, Dances with Wolves with Blue People, it has competition from The Endgame.
Yeah, the goddamn Smurf movie, which sits at number one all-time box office at basically $2.8 billion. Got it with a B. But Endgame is right there with 2.6. And so, roughly, it's really about 150-ish million away from passing Avatar. Which doesn't sound a lot in the context of, you know, when you're talking about 2 billion. But the movie's been out. What week is this? It doesn't say. It's probably about 6 weeks now, about or a little bit over a month.
1 month, because it was April 24th, right?
Yeah, that's right. So it's been almost exactly a month. And it's made that much money. But it's made so much money on the front end. Now it's about sustaining. And this was the reason why I never thought it had a chance of beating Avatar, was that I knew it would make a lot of money up front. But we're in the summer season, so all these movies are going to keep coming and, like, picking at it. And would it have enough legs to make it? Because it came out so hot in the front end, I think it's possible. But it's going to be like a photo finish.
Here's my prediction. It is going to, around, say, 2 weeks from now, 2 or 3 weeks from now, Disney's going to put out a press release saying that you have 1 week left to catch Avengers Endgame in theater one last time. And then they're going to pull it and they're going to put it in the vault until Disney Plus releases it in December. So if you want to see Avengers Endgame in theaters one last time, you have 1 week to do it.
I think if they're going to do that, I think they wait until they give it that week right before Far From Home. Because Captain Marvel got the good old Endgame bump when Endgame came out.
It's still in theaters, sir.
And that's right, it still is. And it's coming out, like next week. Which, if Endgame does that, which with Captain Marvel came out in the beginning of March, and we're about to be in June, so it's crazy to think that 3 months is a long time in movie time, when back in the day, that's nothing. You hadn't even made half your box office by then. If Endgame is in theaters, making that amount of money in 3 months' time, yeah, it's gonna beat this. But it'll catch the Spider-Man bump. And because it is Endgame, and if you say, you know, like, maybe you sweeten up the deal and put it back in IMAX for another week, say, you can catch it in IMAX right before you go see Spider-Man, I'll do it because I want to see it on the biggest screen possible. I think a lot of people will do it. That's how you catch that bump. It's going to help out both movies. And even though technically Spider-Man's a Sony movie, it'll help Sony get the first $1 billion Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, I think it's entirely possible they have some kind of release strategy like that planned out.
I don't know if they had that going into this, but especially after Captain Marvel and stuff, yeah, that's I would say that's the way to go.
Well, that's two. Like, Black Panther got an Infinity War bump.
That's right.
And Captain Marvel got a Endgame bump. So there's a possibility, because of how closely Far From Home ties into Endgame, that you could have an Endgame bump, a Far From Home bump.
Yeah, honestly, that would be... Really, that's the move. Watch Endgame. I would never do this because I'm almost 6 hours. That's a tad bit much for me. But watching Endgame right before Spider-Man, that and the way Spider-Man's supposed to tie in right to the Endgame, that would make the logical sense, and that would be the way I would sell it the closer we get to it.
Yeah, they're doing midnight screenings on the Monday for Far From Home. Which is interesting, going completely old school.
That is way old school. I remember those days when I was still in, like, I'm in my 30s now, but my early 30s, where I would still do that crazy crap and then still come to work the next day.
Well, you were forced to because you had no options for earlier screenings.
I know, but it didn't bother me. But, like, now, I'm an old man, Brian. Like, my body's telling me about 9:30. It's like, don't you want to go to bed? I still don't until, like, 11:30. But to say I'm going to be alert at midnight until about 2:30, those days are long gone. I would be mad at myself for falling asleep in a Spider-Man movie because it's probably going to happen. Because I don't have the next day off, so I got to be here. And, yeah, midnight movies ain't happening.
Still an interesting prospect that they're gonna put those. It really is gonna bump up your tally because if you start Monday night screenings and you run all the way through July 4th weekend,
that box office for Far From Home is gonna be interesting that first week because the weekend box office is not gonna be this big, huge, ginormous number because it's gonna be playing for basically a week before we get to the weekend. And, you know, but people still judge it off of the first weekend box office. So remember that when you're thinking of Far From Home numbers, when it probably comes out, you know, if it makes over $100 million that weekend, I think that's a win because it's probably already made 100 plus from Monday to Friday.
Be interesting to see, especially with the trailer that they dropped with a spoiler warning on it.
Have we ever gotten a trailer with a spoiler warning on it before? For not even for that movie, it's for a whole nother movie. It's like, if you haven't seen Endgame, don't watch this. Which now we know why the Russos were like, you got 2 weeks for the spoilers. And like, why?
Spoilers in next Monday.
Yeah, it's like, why we gotta wait till next Monday? Oh, okay. We see y'all.
Hey, it'll allow people to post set videos.
Yeah. Those are fun, and they still leaking those out. I like those. I like seeing the behind-the-scenes videos, particularly the ones when nobody realizes that somebody illegally has their phone out just watching them, which, you know, considering nobody's supposed to have their phones, there's a whole bunch of them that do, and everybody's just like, yeah, you know, whatever.
Well, I mean, who's going to trust that Captain America is going to leak things online?
Well, I mean, yeah, I know they're not going to do it, but in this world we live in...
Somebody could hack the phone.
Yeah. So, like, no, it's in the trailer. And the trailer's not on the lot, so no. But, yeah, this Far From Home trailer, that's... I don't even know if we talked about the trailer together yet. But what do you think?
Here's my thing. I was under the impression that Mysterio was lying and just playing this big con game because that's who the character is in the comics. And then I read the set visit wherein the writer and or one of the producers, I think, says in the set visit, you know, people have this perception of Mysterio from the comics about him being a con man and Mysterious is in the name, right? But that's not really the motif we're going for. That's not really the idea we're going for here. So if you're telling me you're not following that version of Mysterio and you're kind of doing your own thing, it leaves entirely possible the plausibility that he could be telling the truth. Now, all credit to our guy Jim from IGN, who said a year ago that his thought was that, you know, Nick Fury wasn't actually Nick Fury. It was
Chameleon.
And that, you know, Mysterio and Chameleon were teaming in cahoots together. And, of course, there were rumors earlier about Michael Keaton's Birdman showing up. And, of course, Scorpion was introduced at the end of Homecoming. So you have the roots of a Sinister Six there. That could still be true. But if they're saying that this version of Mysterio is telling the truth and is not lying and is not based on mysticism or distraction or kabuki theater, I've kind of learned to start trusting what the producers say on these things because, like, you know, that's a line that really stood out to me reading that set visit.
So, I like Jim's theory about Nick Fury. I think that can work out and work out well. this thing about Mysterio and the producers, I have one thing to say to you about that. It's an acronym. I'll just say it out. Let's say BARF. Because, I mean, for a year and a half, you and I have been saying, they told us they were going to be BARF. Why does everybody think it's time travel? They kept saying it's BARF, and we introduced the technology, and this is what we're using, and this is what you see. And we get in the movie, and we get slapped in the face because they lied to us.
They also told us Pepper Potts would not have a big role in the film, and she does.
See. So, I don't trust a goddamn word they say. Never again. You never fool me again. He is mysterious. If you're going to tell me you're going to go so far as to give him the bow head, you gave him the fishbowl, the green with the big cape, the gauntlets and everything. You're going to tell me you're going to do all of that but not make him a con man? I call you a liar, sir. You are a liar. He's lying. There might be a multiverse, but he ain't from it.
I don't like the multiverse idea now, at this point in time, because while it is plausible the snap did damage, I don't want it because it's a storytelling crutch. Like, it's the easy way out of having the ramifications of this universe-altering event happen. It leaves the door open for multiple Tony Starks. At least, you know, I don't want that. One of the reasons I love the MCU is that it's a linear timeline. Is it screwed up to hell? Of course it is. I mean, the Spider-Man movies alone mess with it enough, you know, with when the Battle of New York is, when, you know, the freaking Endgame says the Battle of New York 2012.
Yeah.
And then you're saying six years, and then it's a mess. And then you get 2023, and then alternate versions from 2014, living in 2023, and it's, yes, it's messy. Not nearly as messy as the X-Men franchise's timeline.
What is a timeline?
But, I mean, I like that linear storytelling, where you can start from I am Iron Man, go to I am Iron Man, and everything in between is pretty much real time, and you can follow the events along as they go. If you create a multiverse in pocket dimensions, then you're talking literally about, well, now anything is possible.
Yep.
Mutants can come. You know, the Fantastic Four could have been working this entire time in an alternate dimension. Doom could come from an alternate dimension. Like, you don't want to do that. That's a storytelling cheat. Especially when you already have Black Panther established as an entire secret community from the world. You could do, Doom's country?
Latveria.
Latveria. You could have Latveria be another secret country, kind of like Wakanda. That's kind of hidden away from the world until Doom is ready to present it to the world. I mean, you don't have to, you can pull yourself out of the storytelling trap. And I don't want them to do that. I want them to have to creatively find ways to fix it. And one of the big challenges they're going to have going forward is every single freaking director has to deal with a 5-year gap now.
I'm pretty much lockstep with you in the multiverse. I do think this movie, like, by them saying it and putting it in the trailers, I do think Marvel has, there is going to be a multiverse. I don't think we get it in this movie, and I don't think we get the depth of it, hopefully, anytime soon.
I didn't think you needed the multiverse when you have the quantum realm. I mean, there's whole communities in the quantum realm. Like Janet Van Dyne's been living down there for 45 years. I mean, you could, Scott Lang comes out of his van thanks to the true MVP of Endgame, the mouse, and says that it's been 5 hours. So time works way differently down there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I thought that was the way that they were going. And the quantum realm is based on, you know, those kind of parallel universe things that were in the comics for years. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's something that both Peyton Reed and Adam McKay have both talked about as being an inspiration for them when they were coming up with the idea of the quantum realm. So
I think if the multiverse will play into the quantum realm, which will play into, you know, since we're going to get Fantastic Four eventually, the negative zone, I think those are all going to be different sides of the same coin.
You've already seen the negative zone, Chad. It's the place where Dr. Doom
comes
through the portal.
Nope. I don't know what you're talking about. There was just blank space from 2015 in my mind. I don't know anything that happened there. So we will get a real negative zone, I'm sure, and the multiverse will be there as a concept, and they probably will dabble in it, probably in bigger properties down the line. I think this is a red herring in so much as this is not the characters that say they're from there are not. But I think it exists, but I don't think we get anything from it for a while, hopefully.
And you can, the Elementals and Hydra Man and all that is like, it's a cool way to do it without actually doing it, you know? Because, I mean, there's a lot in Marvel's repertoire that they haven't done. I mean, they haven't done Hercules. They haven't done all these kind of crazy out there things. But again, I'll come back to just the craziness of every director that comes from here on out, and we're, what, 6 weeks out from Comic-Con now?
About, yeah.
I mean, we're going to get the slate announcement at Comic-Con more than likely. Every director from here on out has got to deal, unless it's a prequel, like Black Widow, everything has to deal with a 5-year gap.
Yep.
And that's an incredibly interesting place to be.
I'm just for being, like, thinking about the 5-year gap. Like Black Panther, who ran Wakanda while T'Challa was gone. Even if there were like his mom that, I mean, in my mind, his mom ran it. I mean, he's been gone for 5 years. Don't other people have aspirations to the throne? Isn't that going to cause some kind of conflict? You've made conflict in some places just because of the 5 years. You've opened up different avenues to tell stories. So, and you don't have to worry about the time frame because they gave you a 5-year gap. These movies have normally been coming out pretty much the year that we're in. So now you've got like this time to play with to get to where they really are.
And that's interesting that someone like Coogler would know that they're in that position from the time they sign on.
Yeah. Yeah. Because when he signed on after Civil War, and the writer said they started working on Infinity War.
No, I'm just talking about Black Panther 2.
No, I know. But when he signed on for Black Panther, they would have known that this was the direction they were going, because they started working on Infinity War like when they were right after they were done with Civil War. He didn't sign on until after Civil War, the movie came out. So he would have known that this was where they were going, and he had to be okay with it, knowing that he was probably going to have to make another one.
Indeed. I mean, I just think that, you know, it's good to be the king right now.
Yeah. And Marvel is the king. Well, Disney's the king.
But Disney's the king by having slit their competition's throat.
Everybody.
Now let's talk about that studio that Disney bought up and gobbled up.
Right, before you go, just so you know, the top five all time, all of them are Disney now. Because number one is Avatar, and that is now
1, 2, 4, and 5. Number 3 is still Paramount.
3 is still Paramount, yeah. Look at Paramount sticking out there. Nobody even thinks about you these days.
No, that's because they have the Turtles, which are now no longer a thing again. Yeah. The Transformers are reevaluating their strategy because Bumblebee didn't make enough money for them. And
patience.
And the G.I. Joe movie is dead. Franchise is dead. So, I mean, in a world, and Star Trek is dead. So, in a world in which is franchise tentpole heavy, all your heavy tentpole movies are gone.
Yep.
Like, your franchises are all on ice. I mean, I loved Bumblebee. I thought it was a terrific movie. But it didn't make enough money.
I think that you need to be patient. I think it didn't make money primarily because everybody saw, well, the people that saw the last one, like, I ain't doing this again. I'm not doing this again.
There was no trust.
None.
Even with a different filmmaker, there was no trust.
They burnt it all. But that's the kind of movie that builds it back.
Yes, indeed. So, let's talk about Fox. And let's talk about all these release date shifts. Because, boy, howdy, were there a lot of release date shifts. So, let's talk about the fact that they've gotten rid of Fox 2000 completely. Which is a bummer. But at the same time, they keep Fox Searchlight, which has been a major Oscar contender for the last 5 years. So do you really need two art house branches? Not really. You could fold some assets from one into the other. Like, it's not like... The cinema nerd community made it seem like Disney had just, like, said, nope, we're not doing artistic stuff anymore. We're just going to put out temples. And it's not the case. They're going to let Fox... They're going to let Fox Searchlight do its thing. It's just that they are going to fold some... They let all of Fox 2000's assets go, and they folded some of those assets that they didn't get rid of into Fox Searchlight. So you'll still be getting great art house cinema. You just won't be having two separate arms. Mm-hmm. But, you know, things like... things that are now Disney that no one thinks about. The Ford versus Ferrari movie that... Our Logan director is doing.
James Mangold?
Yeah. Mangold's Ford versus Ferrari movie is now a Disney property. It's got to fall somewhere. Disney now owns the Dances with Wolves with Blue People, but they also own the Star Wars, and both have kind of cornered out that Christmas time release schedule. So now you got to alternate. You know, the Woman in the Window, another little... another movie based on a very popular property. I mean, it really wasn't 19 where you had to do so much shuffling. It was really the going forward. And the big thing that movie nerds, cinema ner- that comic book nerds really care about is a movie that has been languishing in development hell called New Mutants, which has been pushed back like 7 times.
I don't know why we're still playing this game. I don't know. When a few months ago, the stars of your movie, I know Macy Williams, and I can't remember, I want to say Anya, is it Anya Taylor-Joy?
Yeah.
I think they were asked about the movie, and the rumors were that they were, you know, they pulled it, they were going to do some reshoots, and then they were going to release it, and they're like, I don't even know. We never did the reshoots. As of right now, according to them, they've never done the reshoots. So why kick this movie down the road when nobody believes it's coming out in theaters? Like, I cannot, because it's slated right now to come out in what, 2020? Mm-hmm. April of 2020? That's a year after the merge is complete. People, when they see comic book
Marvel, it's 2 years after the original release date, right?
Yes.
Wasn't the original release date April of 18?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Because, yep, that's how it was.
Then you didn't see a trailer till February. And then...
The first trailer we got, I know, was on a Friday the 13th. It was on a Friday the 13th in October. Because the movie's supposed to come out the following April on Friday the 13th. And then they just start kicking it down the road.
April of 18 to November of 18... And then to February of 19, and then now to April of 20.
Yep.
It's like 4 release date changes, Chad.
So yeah, but now it's going to be a whole year. So when people see Marvel flash in front of a movie, I mean, people are fuzzy on that anyway. But now it's going to be like, oh, this is a true deal Marvel film. Why would Marvel want anything to do with that?
Unless you're asking Mr. Feige to come in and fix things. If you got to do reshoots...
But here's the thing about having a young adult cast, because most of them are in their late teens, early 20s. 2 years is a long ass time. They're going to look different, like noticeably.
Well, but like the whole confusion about New Mutants is the fact that the man, like, it was very clear that Josh Boone had his vision, and he envisioned a horror movie set in a cinema, in a comic book world. Which we're getting one of those kind of movies with James Gunn's produced movie that's coming out tonight. Superman. What if Superman were to go bad? Brightburn. I mean, that was kind of his idea of a haunted house type movie, and he had different horror themes he wanted to play on, horror genre themes that he wanted to touch on for every film in the trilogy. And then he shot that movie. And then they screened it for the Brass, and the Brass were like, we don't want anything to do with this. You've got to change a whole bunch of stuff. And they changed a whole bunch of stuff, and they screened that for for the brass, and they tested it, and it didn't test nearly as well as the horror version did. So, allegedly, he was told to go back and make it a horror movie again. In which case, that's when the merger starts happening, and then it's a case that we're not going to fund this, and then Fox basically kicking the can to Marvel, or Disney. And so that's where you are now. And meanwhile, this entire time, poor Josh Boone can't get work outside of sitting here trying to make his New Mutants movie. I mean, I don't know what's worse, being Neil Blomkamp and not getting to make your Alien movie, or getting to make your Alien movie and then having to remake it 3 times.
Look at her.
Mm-hmm.
We just saw her on Sunday on Game of Thrones. She does not look like that. It's a picture of Macy Williams from New Mutants. She does not look like that. You cannot. I mean, you can. It can be, you know, fan four stick, and clearly tell when they're doing reshoots on
Kate Mara.
Yeah, because that wig was just not good, and they just did not care. It didn't match up at all. You can do something like that, but again, if I'm Disney and I've given all the comic book stuff over to Kevin Feige, and if I'm Kevin Feige looking at this, I'm like, I understand everything you're saying about this, but this one right here, I need you to take it, move it over here to Hulu, and get it out my face. I don't want it associated with me at all. At all.
But you're going to have to pay those kids out.
You're Disney.
You're going to have to pay those kids out. You're going to have to pay Boone out.
Whatever contractual obligation you have to do to move it to Hulu, you bite the bullet and you pay it. You pay it out and be done with it.
And then that's assuming that there's a releasable product on there. Because if the movie's a mangled, cut-up mess, I mean, then you're in a Zack Snyder cut situation. Where, like, what is the actual cut? And who cuts it together? I mean, you know, if you've got two different versions of the film, like, completely different versions of the film, one's a YA adventure movie, and the other one's a YA horror movie, then, like, those two don't match. And if you go back and you put the YA horror elements back in the adventure movie, it's going to stick out like a sore thumb, tonally. And then if you take the adventure elements and put them back in the horror movie, it's going to be off tonally. So, I mean, is there enough there? For me, it comes down to, is there enough to release?
If there's enough to release that is in Josh Boone's original vision, I'll be like, look, I'm kicking it to Hulu, but I'm going to kick it to Hulu the way you wanted it. That's the least I can do with all the other crap that's going on here. Take it, go home. I mean, I don't know. I know there's deals about being theatrically released and all that stuff, but Disney has another movie that's going straight to Hulu. It has, what's her name?
Well,
from Pitch Perfect.
Anna Kendrick.
Yes,
but that was shot. You're talking about the.
It's like the Santa Claus.
The Santa Claus movie, that was shot directly for Disney Plus.
See, I thought it was shot for. I thought it was one of those that was shot for the movies, and then when Disney Plus got announced, they're like, "We're going to kick it over here."
No, it was intended to be a Disney Plus, just like Lady and the Tramp is intended.
Yeah, I knew that one was intended.
Now the thing that surprised me was when McGee's like, yeah, we're going to have True Lies on Disney Plus. And I'm like, that isn't a material that screams, you know, Disney Plus to me at all.
And that's Hulu.
Yeah.
All right, whatever, dude.
You know one thing that you don't see on this remade list, though, Chad?
Damn it.
Yes.
See, they got the idea. I mean, I know New Mutants is shot, Gambit is not, but we can how long have we pretended this movie's gonna come out?
4 years at least.
Jeez, we've been doing this for what, 5? So most of the time we've been pretending this Gambit movie is gonna come out. In all correct fairness, a good portion of that time we pretended the Masters of the Universe movie is gonna come out, and at least that one has traction. There's a guy, and there's a script, and there's directors that have been on there for longer than 6 months. Gambit, I mean, they did build sets for it 3 years ago. But good on you, Disney, for getting rid of this. But my rationale for Gambit ties into New Mutants. Disney wants to start, when they start X-Men, which is not going to be anytime soon, it's a clean break. So you got to flush everything that happened before. New Mutants is, you're wrestling, you know. New Mutants is that one little nugget. That one little nugget that you just can't get to go down. They just need to flush it and be done with him. Flush it to Hulu. Everything is fine.
We'll see. I mean, I just find the whole thing interesting because how you balance a schedule in which, you know, obviously Fox's output's going to have to go down. The green lighting process is going to be interesting now. I mean, the only thing I really am excited about is the fact that Fox kept Death on the Nile.
Yeah, I was just looking at that. Yeah. That and the West Side Story. I'm really curious about that.
like Disney was going to tell Spielberg no.
I mean, I know. I
you've been trying to make this movie for 25 years. You've got an all Spanish cast. Like, you're doing it with, like, actual, you know, ethnic background thing.
Yeah, I didn't think they were going to. I mean, I knew they were going to tell him no. But it was just, you know, seeing it in the black and white.
Yeah. And he squashed his beef with Netflix, which really wasn't about Netflix. It was about studio owners. Or theater owners.
Y'all can't see how hard I'm just rolling my eyes through the back of my head because Spielberg was ridiculous for this. Just ridiculous.
I mean, he's got a point in that we just talked about the release window, right? When we talked about it used to be 3 months. Like, now you're lucky if you get 6 weeks.
6 weeks, I would say that's probably about average.
Right. So, I mean, the theatrical run is a lot more limited than it was 20 years ago when Titanic came out in 97. Like, it's a lot shorter now. And things move to home video quicker. And things move to video on demand a lot quicker. And so, like, there's less time for theater audiences to see it. And, look, my whole deal with this whole conversation is that it's stupid. And it's stupid because the Academy only mandates that it has to play for 2 weeks in 4 theaters in Los Angeles County.
Not New York, too?
It's I think it's Los Angeles and New York, but it's like the theater count is some ridiculously small, and it has to play exclusively in a 2-week window. And I get why the independent film community got concerned, because if you get to a mandated theater count or a mandated release window, where, okay, now, right now it's 2 weeks in 4 theaters, right? That's kind of doable if you have the right studio behind you who think you're an awards contender if you're, say, a documentary, or say you're a foreign language film, or, you know, something like that. If you got the right studio behind you, they will finance enough to have you in an LA County theater for 4 weeks. They're not going to have your back to release you in 3,000 plus theaters for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
It's just not going to work. And so what you really have to do is you have to negotiate a truce between the theater owners and Netflix, because the theater owners are like, these guys over here at Amazon, they've been guaranteeing us a 35-day window so that they'll let their movies play exclusively in our theaters for 35 days, and then they'll put it on Prime. But you're wanting us to put Roma in the theaters. Granted, you'll give us a week, but you're not going to give us 4 weeks like they will before you put it on your streaming service. So, you know, go fly a kite. So really what you've got to work on is the theater owners and Netflix coming to agreement on a term for how long they're willing to put their movies in the theaters. And the thing is, this question is going to come up immediately because Scorsese wants nothing to do with a Roma-type rollout where, like, you're in there for a week in L.A. and that's it. He wants an actual theatrical release, which is part of the issue that major studios had with financing that film to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was almost impossible to turn a profit. Because even if you did release it in 3,000-plus theaters, the amount of money it was going to take to de-age De Niro, Pacino, and Pesci for 45 minutes of screen time was going to run your budget up so huge that there was no way a drama like that, which maybe with Scorsese's name attached to it, does Gang of New York numbers. Or what, you know, nothing's going to do Wolf of Wall Street numbers, but does Gang of New York numbers. And then there's no way that you can turn a profit on that. So,
just so we can gauge.
Yeah. This. 77 million, which in 2002 dollars, so let's just say 90 million, roughly, in 2019 dollars. 90 million. If it cost $210 million to make, plus distribution, plus P&A, you're looking at a movie that costs nearly $300 million to make, and you're going to turn a $97 million profit, a $97 million box office draw, because your director is demanding a 3,000 theater release for 3 weeks? Like, that's the pathway to hell as far as profitability goes. So, like, you've got to find that kind of happy medium between theater owners and Netflix. And if you don't, then you're just going to end up, you know, continuing to have these feuds. And even Amazon's changing their strategy now with their new change in leadership, because they're changing their whole model of what kind of movies they actually produce. Because, you know, for a while they were making the films like, you know, the Casey Affleck movie that he won his Oscar for.
Oh, Manchester by the Sea?
Manchester by the Sea. Like, those were the kind of movies, Beautiful Boy, this past season. Those are the kind of movies they've been making. The new CEO of their studio has said that they're kind of moving in a different direction. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting as far as this Fox-Disney thing. I just find the balancing of the schedule very funny. The fact we're going to alternate between Star Wars and Avatar every Christmas. The fact that, you know, Fox's output's going to have to be lowered. It's just an interesting balancing act, and projects that were greenlit are now no longer greenlit and are going to find their home somewhere on a content page.
Yeah, we won't see so much of it this year, but next year, for sure, it's going to be fun times.
So, Detective Pikachu is a good comic, a good video game movie brought to life.
Surprisingly, I didn't see it. I got to.
It's okay.
I wanted to see it, but
It's okay. Ryan Reynolds is not as fun when he has to be PG rated.
His voice was always weird to me. I mean, I saw the commercials. It looks like it works. It's just like, I would imagine a more cuddlier voice as Pikachu.
Yeah, you kind of have the Colin Farrell problem with what's the teddy bear?
Oh, the Colin Firth with Paddington. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a nice movie. It is a good good video game movie, because it takes the best elements of Pokemon, puts them in the human world, and frames it basically around a story about fathers and sons, which is interesting. But now that we've gotten a good video game movie by everybody's account that'll make way more money than Assassin's Creed ever did, we're now thinking of doing Mortal Kombat again. First time since what, 94?
No, it'd probably be like 96. Because the first one was like 95, I'm more than sure.
But, I mean, we are moving toward a guy like James Wan producing.
So, 97. Yeah. Ooh, that's a big drop.
95 was the original movie.
Yeah, and 97 was the whole bad one. Mm-hmm. That half the cast was like, nope, I'm not touching this. That's how I know who James Remar is, because he was Raiden in the second one, and I always just kind of laugh. But James Wan producing gives me hope, but I have no hope in a good video game movie, even though for the longest time Mortal Kombat, the first one, was it.
Right, and then you're getting a first time filmmaker who's been doing commercials, a la a guy like Zack Snyder, to come in and do your movie. By the way, that guy has a very weird interpretation of the Fountainhead. That's a story about sex, which is quite interesting.
Who
Snyder? His comments were it was the Fountainhead is actually about sex. It's not right wing propaganda.
I don't want to talk about Zach. Zach
doesn't understand Ayn Rand, apparently.
Zach gives me a lot of headaches now. I don't want to talk about Zach. It's kind of unfair to this guy to compare him to Zach, because people have such firm interpretations of who Zack Snyder is. This guy has won awards for commercials. Zach was making music videos. It could be something different, but...
wasn't Webb doing commercials at one point?
Probably.
Or did he come from music videos as well?
I think it was commercials.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe follow that route outside of Amazing Spider-Man 2. Just go right around that.
Things that happen when Sony gets involved.
Yeah. Man, they're really bad at this.
Yeah, Sony under Pascal was kind of a mess. But Academy Award winning producer Avi Arad.
That's disappointing. But whatever. He got one for Spider-Verse, man. God, man. Like, the best Spider-Man movie, and his name is plastered all over it. But all that to say, good luck to you, Mortal Kombat. I hope this version succeeds. The way the video games have been going, it's more conducive to a narrative story. So good luck to you. I wish you all the best. I will see it, unless it's terrible, and then I won't.
Indeed. So, Chad, we finally have news about the Batman. Aside from that, Affleck will not be playing the Batman. And aside from the fact that, like, it's a year one adaptation, maybe.
Yeah, I'm not even guessing anymore. Who knows? But we got a casting announcement, and much like Ben Affleck before him, and Heath Ledger before him, and way back before the internet, Michael Keaton before him, the internet burned itself to the ground in fire and fury, because all they know this guy for is being a sparkly vampire. The current rumor, the very strong rumor, is that Robert Pattinson is Batman, and the nerds have lost their collective minds. I'm fine with it, because I know that he's not just Edward Cullen from Twilight. I have not seen all of his indie work, but I know enough people that have, that I trust.
He's gotten way better since Water for Elements.
I've heard that one was like, and people were like,
he's starting to. He you can see him starting to try and act, like in Twilight. It's just Twilight. It's doing that thing, but starting with Water for Elements, moving into some of his other work in the independent scene, especially this new movie he has coming out with William Dafoe, where there are sailors and dealing with the lighthouse. Like, the guy's got chops. I mean, it's just, Nicholas Holt has the chops. I mean, he was up for it too. I mean,
I don't like Nicholas Holt for the role.
Well, I don't like Nicholas Holt for the role of Batman, but I like Nicholas Holt for the role of Q in the James Bond franchise.
Is he Q? No, it's Paddington as Q.
Right. But, like, I could see Nicholas Holt more taking on the Q role than I can Bond. Yeah. I could see him doing more of the Alfred than I could see him doing more of the Batman himself. Or even if you wanted to do him as Riddler, I could see that easier than I could see him being Batman. But I mean, you know, most people know him from Mad Max or the X-Men franchise, the second iteration of the X-Men franchise, which will conclude with the Dark Phoenix as Beast. So I mean, I think Pattinson's got the chops. Now, as far as casting for your Penguin and your Catwoman, I have no idea, because the last thing I remember about them doing this thing was that they were going to do an Arkham Asylum take, as well as a year one where Batman's just kind of fighting his way through Arkham. So if that's the case, you would have to probably cast a way bigger number of villains, and especially iconic villains, than just Catwoman and Penguin.
I mean, it'll be something. I think it's going to be something in that vein. Maybe not Arkham Asylum. There's there's a couple of stories where Batman meets all of his rogues. There's like Arkham Asylum, Hush, Dark, The Long Halloween. I think it'll be something in those veins, and particularly like The Long Halloween, and which is not like he's trying to escape Arkham. Is that one is a 12 issue series. It's a detective story, and he meets up with all of the rogues along the way, all of them intertwined with this mystery he's trying to figure out. I can see that this movie taking cues from something like that. So when I hear that they're going to have Penguin and Catwoman, and then they're going to have more villains, I'm like, okay, I'm fine with it, because they're not going to be like, they're all not going to be trying to get him. He's trying to get information. He comes across them along the way. The only thing with that is, because they're going to be such iconic villains, you're going to be casting you know, significant people in those roles, and those people probably won't be on screen but for like 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, that would be my thought as well. I mean, I saw that the one of the fantasy castings I saw was Sunrise Ronin, who, you know, was also up for Rey at one point. I can't really see her doing Catwoman. Like Lady Bird?
Oh yeah, no.
I can't see her. She's a great actress.
I loved her in that movie.
But I can't see her doing Lady Bird. I can't see her doing Catwoman. I've seen, you know, she's done, you know, she's done Brooklyn, she's done, you know, Hannah, like, she's done a bunch of work. Mary Queen of Scots, she's done really good work, and she's an Academy Award level actress, but, in her Little Women adaptation, I'm looking forward to, but not Catwoman.
Not Catwoman.
I mean, people had a hard enough time picturing Hathaway as Catwoman, and Nolan never actually calls her Catwoman.
Never.
So, I mean, like, I don't know, man. Like, Pfeiffer set the standard. Halle Berry is a complete firestorm of a disaster, but that's because of the movie that she's in.
Yeah, that movie just sucked.
And, you know, if you look at the history, Pfeiffer's a big-ass name in 1994. Halle Berry's a big-ass name in 2004. Like, you're gonna need a big-ass name to play Catwoman. So, Jennifer Lawrence for Catwoman?
No. What? Why would... I almost want to walk out of here right now because of that.
Because she gets every major role that she's offered.
No, man. That's not what I want. I have no idea who I want for Catwoman.
I mean, is there a rule against bringing Danny DeVito back to play Penguin?
No.
Because Josh Gad's the guy?
I mean, honestly, the work Josh Gad has put in to making it seem like, if he has nothing in place, the work he's made it seem like to put in that he has something in place and that he will be Penguin, I want him to be rewarded for that. Outside of that, no, I don't want Danny DeVito, because to this day, there are people that think that interpretation of the Penguin is what the Penguin is. And it is not.
No. I mean, what's the guy who played Cobblepot on Gotham? I mean, that's a little bit closer interpretation, but still kind of out there and off the wall. But that show's kind of out there and off the wall.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't... The Penguin is normally like a tubby dude. He's a... Basically, the Penguin's just a gangster.
It's the same thing from the 1960s... The guy from the 1960s television series.
Yeah, more or less. He's not as goofy as that. He's like serious enough. He does have the gadget umbrellas. He does have the suits and all that stuff. But
the monocle.
But he's just a gangster. He has a club that he runs called the Iceberg Lounge. He launders all his dirty stuff through there. And Batman normally just tolerates him doing that stuff because he stays within his realm and he can keep him in check. And I think that's similar to the role he will play in this movie. He is not some shut-off fish man that lives under the sewer with a bunch of reject circus people. Tim Burton was going full Tim Burton in that
was movie. Given that ability after Batman 89 made a whole bunch of money.
Yep. Made all this money. Tim Burton, go be Tim Burton. Oh, wait. We didn't watch the rest of the Tim Burton movies. This is not a good idea.
Well, there weren't really that many Tim Burton movies at that point. It was Edward Scissorhands, and that's about it.
I mean, Beetlejuice should have been enough. Yeah. People should have gotten it off of that.
Still are being threatened with the Beetlejuice 2 over and over again.
That did die.
But it did die, because Dumbo made $63 million.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forget that's even a thing that happened this year.
Indeed, it is a thing. Like I'm pretty sure it was around $63
million. I didn't even go see it. The kid definitely wanted to, and I was just like, no, that's okay. $111 million. But that budget is, woof.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's made almost $350 million worldwide. It'll still be a little in the red, but not, it's one that Disney can take.
Not one you're going to write off.
Yeah. Sorry. I mean, the elephant's cute. I just don't. It was Tim Burton. I didn't want any part of that movie.
So, I mean, I trust the director for the Batman. I trust Matt Reeves. Gonna be interested to see what he does, obviously. So, we will see. So, let's move on, Chad. Did you know there's a Toy Story movie coming out in like a month?
Yes, I do. But that's because I have the benefit of having a 10-year-old at home. And my TV stays on Disney Channel.
This is a Toy Story movie in which Bo Peep is being cultured by society.
I honestly saw the trailer. Well, she wasn't that much in the last trailer, but she's a big part of this movie. I'm talking through my thoughts on that movie as I saw it, you know, a few days ago. But yeah, she's a big part of the movie. Not much in that trailer.
Not the new one that just came out. Because the new one that just came out is really just focused on Woody and Buzz.
Yeah, again. That's the last one
but,
I saw.
But the second trailer,
she was more than that.
That was the whole thing revolving around the fair and how, you know, cultured and liberated. And the only thing that concerns me about that story is that it feels a lot like that she's going to be working through some of the same issues that, say, someone like the purple teddy bear from Toy Story 3 was working through. The same kind of issues that the prospector dude from Toy Story 2 was working through. It's the same kind of thing that Jesse was working through. Like, it's abandonment issues. And, like, you know, your owners are not always going to want you, and you've got to take care of yourself and toughen up and, you know, be ready to fight in the real world, because the real world's a very harsh and cruel and unforgiving place. Mm-hmm. And just, like, I've seen or heard this story from you guys before. You know, one toy gets lost, the other toy has to find them. Like, they're dealing with an antagonist who's jaded and has had a bad experience for the previous owner. Like these points, you just keep hitting, but you do it because you're adorable and cute, and apparently the ending wrecks everybody again.
Yeah. I'm curious to see just what they do with this movie, just because of everything you said. I mean, to date, we don't know that there is an antagonist. It seems like if there would be one, it would be Bo Peep. But I do not. That would be dumb to make Bo Peep the antagonist after having her in the first two movies, and the relationship that she's built with Woody, which leads me to believe that Keanu Reeves is going to be a bad guy. But who knows? Because he's the only other name I know in this. I don't know. I haven't been paying much attention to Toy Story 4. I haven't gone out of my way for it. I know that it'll probably change in a couple of weeks. I'm going to see it. Everybody's going to go see it because it's Toy Story. I think the brand has built up that kind of recognition that people will go just because of the name. I don't think there's enough people that saw Toy Story 3, thought it was a perfect ending, and was like, screw this, I'm not going to see 4 because it should have ended with 3. I may feel that way, but I'm still going to go see 4.
It encourages me that the entire cast is like, the ending wrecked us. Like,
yeah.
I've heard Hanks and I've heard Alan say this for like a year now. Like, I cried after reading the last pages. Like, it emotionally tore me up to say that dialogue. Like, that alone makes me curious about, you know, how we could go from toys being rescued from the incinerator by the aliens who finally got their hands on the claw machine to whatever we're going to do in 4.
If this, because 3 has like two of those like gut-wrenching, punch you in the face kind of emotional things. We thought we were going to watch them die. They thought they were going to die. We thought we were going to watch them die. They got saved and then decide we're all going to leave Andy, and Andy has to have this tearful
moment
with Woody, which even to this day always gets me. If they're gonna, you know, talking through all this, maybe I don't want to see Toy Story 4. I don't know if I want to go through this again. For me, I can't keep sitting here crying at these toys. I don't know if I want to do this, but you know, because I have heard, you know, I did hear about Hanks crying about it. I'm like, all right, that's encouraging news, but I don't want to go through this again. I'm tired of being emotionally kicked in the chest by these toys.
And this would be the first one without Lester.
Yeah.
Who started as director on this and then moved off of it and then got fired.
Yep. It had to happen. Just had to happen.
So let's move on. Another Disney property. Chad, we've had 10 Star Wars movies in our lifetimes. We've had the eight trilogy movies. We've had the 2 spinoff movies, one of which is beloved, the other one people want to throw in the garbage. Each one of them has set a Vanity Fair cover. Each one of them, or at least the modern ones, have all had Vanity Fair covers. I own the trilogy of Vanity Fair magazine stories. We got the Vanity Fair cover spread for Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker, in which our journalistic writer winds his way through a convoluted briar patch to give us a few bits of information about new planet names, our first really good look at Carrie Russell as the new Jango Fett-like bounty hunter criminal type character, our first shots of Luke Skywalker not as a Force ghost.
And
Kylo and Rey battling it out in the rain. And nary an emperor to be seen.
So I'll give my... I didn't read the article because I opened it. I was going to. And then I just kept scrolling and kept scrolling. And it would not end. And I was like, I can't do this right now. But I did look at all the pictures. I will tell you what stood out to me from those. Most of these... I would say all of these pictures are just... From a visual standpoint, they are stunning to just look at. I'm really intrigued about the Rey and the Kylo one because it's like really visceral and it's action. It's as much action as you can get into a still photo. And, you know, after the last movie didn't have it, we're going to have some lightsaber on lightsaber violence. I'm all here for that every day of the week. The picture of... Finn, and I don't know her name, but the new character, and they're on those horse things.
I mean, Lando Calrissian's daughter.
Did they say that in the story? Okay. I'm not against that per se, but.
Lando would have a lot of kids across the town. Let's just admit this. Lando would have a lot of kids across
the town. I don't need every black person in the damn movies to be Lando's kids. I don't need that. But. I would have that picture, I can frame it, stick it on the back of my sofa, and be like, this is how Star Wars gangsters are supposed to be, like that. The shot in the Falcon with the New Age crew, which is Oscar Isaac, Poe, and Lando, and Chewie, and BB-8.
And C.O., don't forget C.O.
C.O.'s in there too?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That it's just great just because you got the new guys and then you got Lando in there and Billy Dee and all of his Billy Dee-ness. And who cannot want to see Billy Dee in a new Star Wars movie?
Who has spent years defending his character.
I don't know why Billy Dee has to defend his character. He's Billy Dee in a Star Wars movie. Look, he ain't sell out Han. He tried to save everybody. Leave Billy Dee alone. Mostly because Billy Dee's in that picture, I really like it. The Carrie Fisher stuff, that's why I really want to read it to see what they said about the Carrie Fisher stuff. But all in all, they know how to put out a spread that are gonna get this gonna get people talking, and that's what this did.
Having read all of these spreads, they give us nothing. They give us bits and pieces to start conversations about. They generally come at around this portion of the... So, like, the ones for 7 and 8 came out in the fall, not the spring. But all of the prequel saga ones came out the spring before the movie. I mean, they give us enough tidbits. They give us planet names. They give us confirmation of the Knights of Ren being back. They talk about with JJ extensively about the Lucas legacy and the weight of it. And it's kind of what I didn't like about this particular guy's writing style. Cause like we get off into a whole tangent conversation about the political nature of Star Wars and like the jadedness of Lost Innocence in the 70s and all this. Oh, so. and, and somehow we wind our way back to, oh, by the way, JJ said that the Knights of Ren are going to be back. Like, it's not crisp storytelling writing. Feature writing in my mind. But that's the thing. It happens. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I liked all the pictures. You talked about that one with the horses and Finn on the horse with the other character. I would frame the Kylo and Rey in the rain with the lightsabers photo because I really, really like that photo.
It's a really good one.
So, but, I mean, all these have enough action, you know, to... gives you enough to talk about. And that's all these articles are looking to be, as a conversation piece.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we just sit here and talked about it. So that's their goal. That's fine. It does make me feel better that there was nothing in there that I really needed to read.
Mm-mm. No. I mean, it's mostly JJ going like, I don't know how I was going to do this. And I did it. And like, most of the interview comes from right after the panel in Chicago where they dropped the trailer.
Oh, well.
So, like, it's not like she was sitting on set in Tunisia talking to him as he was, you know, doing the movie. Most of it is an interview that was done immediately after the trailer drops in April. It was like, that's not really helpful.
No. Yeah. So, we're on radio silence until
October? I'd say Comic-Con, maybe. But, I mean, D23 is going to be basically used this year to launch
Disney Plus.
So you're going to get some Mandalorian stuff and some Rogue One prequel stuff. And maybe if Iger is suggesting there's a third Star Wars TV series in development.
Maybe get a name or something.
Something like that. But, like, as far as, like, Star Wars names and Star Wars, footage, I think we're done until it gets going on sale in October.
Okay.
I mean, you can just keep replaying the shots of her jumping over the TIE fighter,
yeah.
But
that's a cool shot.
Yeah. But, so, I'm working under the assumption that shot of R2-D2 and Luke in the magazine is a shot taken from the flashback scene where we finally get all the information about the Jedi Temple being destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And not a, the Skywalker has risen.
Yeah, I didn't. At this point, I don't. I just try not to put any stock in any of these things that I see, because as has been proven, everything is a lie until we see the movie. You get enough information, but then they'll give you something like this, just enough people to be like, ooh. And so, no, that picture, I just like, no, it's a lie. You're lying to me.
I wish he had done all three. And I have no disrespect toward Ryan. I think Ryan's a really good storyteller, and I really like some things that he does in Last Jedi. The Throne Room scene is just amazing. Mm. The Star Destroyer being destroyed is amazing. But to see JJ do something that he's never had to do before, which is tell a complete story, beginning to end. You know, yes, it's a decade-long commitment after having worked for 12 straight years before that. Mm. So you're asking the man to work for 20 straight years with no break. And he's got young children, and he's got a good family, and all that. But, like, you know, to see him have to do something where he has to plan something, like, I would have rather him and Kasten be walking around the streets of Europe plotting out a complete trilogy,
mm-hmm.
than just, how are we going to get this movie made? And that's pretty much what he says in the article. Like, we're just trying to make one movie.
Yeah.
Like, we had some conversations about Kylo and, like, the background of what Kylo might end up doing, but, like, we were just trying to get a damn movie made. And we had limited amounts of time to do it.
Yeah, it probably would. It would have worked out better, at least in the fans' eyes. I don't think Last Jedi deserves everything he gets.
Well, he's going to have to pick up those. He's going to have to decide which pieces he wants to pick up. And, you know, that's going to be a challenge, because Trevor was on this movie for a while.
Yeah,
and
that's
so
true.
I mean, you have to jettison in the script. You have to start all over from scratch, again with a compressed timeline. And he has to do something something else he hasn't done, which is conclude a story. Mm-hmm. Because Into Darkness and Star Trek are the first and second chapters of something. Cloverfield is its own movie. He walks into Mission Impossible 3 after John Woo and De Palma have already done their thing. In those movies, up until Brad Bird and then late, especially McQuarrie, those movies don't really connect or hadn't really connected except for Ethan Hunt. So he hasn't had to finish a story. And so the idea of him doing the first and third stanzas, you know, when it's really that second stanza that would bridge the gap between the two, I feel like we're going to miss out on. Because now I feel like he's going to have... Like, the Knights of Ren are a perfect example of something like he clearly set up, he clearly conceived of, he clearly wanted to tell, and Ryan didn't really care about, except for a line of dialogue about, you know, he took a bunch of my Padawans and left. Which, you know, we kind of interpret as those are the Knights of Ren, but we don't know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would have loved to have seen JJ do his thing. You know, I like the Vanity Fair piece, it's got some really nice pictures in it, but, I mean... And it's got some very nice photo comments from Kathleen Kennedy about Lucas's legacy. But, you know, it's just a fun piece, and it gives some interesting tidbits.
Yeah.
So, Chad, can a Terminator movie work in 2019?
No.
Even if it has James Cameron attached to it?
No.
Even if Linda Hamilton comes back?
No.
Even if the Terminators are becoming more human-like?
No. No. How many? I don't have too many different ways I can say no, but no. That was. I mean, somebody posed a question a while back that maybe the Terminator is not a franchise. Maybe it's just two good movies, and that should have been the end of it. And again, I have nothing against anybody in this new trailer, but maybe that's just the case because I saw that trailer, and while it's good to see Linda Hamilton back. Blowing up Terminators and stuff. It's meh to see Arnold back as a Terminator since we've seen him in the last, two?
Everything.
Yeah, he's in all of them. It feels like there's nothing for the story.
I'd rather Schwarzenegger have done a Conan the Barbarian movie.
King Conan for the win.
Right.
As somebody that's only seen bits and pieces of the other ones, I would have rather seen King Conan than all these Terminator movies.
I mean, it's just the simple fact of you can't retcon you can't retcon D2, Judgment Day. You can't do it. Because if you retcon Judgment Day, then you've changed your entire mythos and look, I love 24. 24 was a fantastic show for 4 seasons. By season 5, you got, or 5 or 6, you get the writer's strike. And then from there, there's only so many ways you can endanger the life of the president. And there's only so many ways a terrorist attack can occur that you can depict on television. So, there's only so many ways for Jack Bauer to save the world. And there's only so many times that Jack Bauer can stand there and say, hey, X, Y, or Z is going on. I need your help to fix it. And there's only so many ways that the federal government can say, screw you, Jack, you don't know what you're talking about. You're being stupid. Oh, wait. Yes, Jack, you're actually right. I'm sorry about that. How can we help you? There's only so many times a daughter can be fighting a cougar. I mean, there's only so many ways that you can get around the date of Skynet becoming active. There's only so many ways you can get around the conceit of a mother having to be saved so her child could be born so that he could lead the resistance to send his father back in time to create him. And in theory, at least, if what is the goal of the two movies is achieved and and Judgment Day is thwarted... And Skynet never becomes active. In and of itself, it's a paradox because then John Connor doesn't exist at all, yeah. And his mother, and him, and his mother and her husband live happily ever after. So, or her and John live happily ever after. So, yeah. Inherently, T3's okay. I mean, it's the Jurassic Park 3 of the movies. Like, it's an okay conceit. It doesn't really play as well as it needs to, but it deals with Judgment Day. Mm-hmm. It deals with, you know, them trying to get to the computer to stop the thing, Skynet from becoming active. And the other thing, too, is when you get to these world-ending movies, you set a date where the world ends, and then your movie comes out
after that date.
Right. So, like, you have that perpetual problem. Like, you know, at least Emmerich released 2012 in 2012. You know? I mean, look, I have absolute faith in James Cameron. The man's been down in Australia shooting Dances with Wolves with blue people for, you know, 4 years now. Mm-hmm. Like, I have the utmost faith that he's going to find a way to pull those off, at least one of them. Maybe not three of them, but at least pull off one of them. You don't doubt him, but, I mean, this is like, you've done a part of a movie where you're in the future, in the dystopian future, in the apocalyptic world of humans versus Terminators. You did some of that in Salvation. You've done the complete swerve, timeline altering thing in Genesis. So, like, what you really gonna do here? I mean, all of this looks very much like there's some new savior that has to be protected.
Yep. It looks like Terminator 2 all over again.
Well, I mean, literally, Linda Hamilton says in the dialogue, in the trailer, I know her because I was her. And yeah. And by that, I'm assuming that she means this woman needs to be protected by this Terminator from being assassinated, which is what I was protected from in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, this Linda Hamilton looks and feels a lot more like... It never felt earnest to me, the Linda Hamilton, that her character, Linda, or Sarah Connor, that Sarah Connor would just leave a casket full of guns for her kid to find, which is a thing that happens in T3. Like, it that didn't feel like her. It mm-hmm. felt more like, to me, that she would work her ass off to protect him for as long as she could. She'd eventually meet her own demise at the hands of a Terminator somewhere for him to be enraged and have the burning fire inside of him
to go out and do what...
To go out and do what he needs to do. And even that is eschewed by Genesis, where, like, all of a sudden, you know, actually, John Connor wasn't the savior. He was actually the problem the whole time. You know, it's... Yes, I have faith because one of the originals is back. But it's... There are so many problems and so many issues with doing a new Terminator movie that it just feels like, look, we've gotten, it's been, 35 years since Gremlins 2? We keep hearing about a Gremlins 3, but, like, how you pull that off in today's world, you have no idea. Like, there are some things that are just good movies. I mean, Back to the Future was a good movie.
Yeah.
They designed it as a trilogy, which is amazing for something that's, you know, in the mid-80s that you're, like, gonna make it a franchise when that wasn't a thing that was happening at the time. I mean, for God's sake, your movie ends with to be continued.
Yeah.
But you can still question whether or not Back to the Future should have been a franchise. You know? If it was just one good movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, same thing with Terminator. I felt like the Terminator story was told in those two movies with Cameron directing, and it didn't need to go beyond that.
Yep.
But as we just got finished talking about, Paramount doesn't have franchises. And the franchises they do have are dormant or dormant and not active.
Mm-hmm.
And in tentpole society, you ain't got tentpoles.
You ain't got nothing.
You ain't got nothing. You might as well just be an art house studio that makes Oscar-contending movies and throw all your money behind Oscar campaigns. And even then, you're going to lag behind because the ungodly amount that Netflix spent on Roma, the largest spend on an awards campaign in history, that's going to become the new norm. Mm. So, I mean, I get it. Terminator's a brandable, bankable IP. People know it. Schwarzenegger's still alive. Linda Hamilton's willing to come back. Cameron's like, I got the rights back. Yay me. Tim Miller's got some good cred after doing Deadpool. This is something completely different than Deadpool. And you can argue how much of that is any director and how much of it's Ryan. So, I mean, we'll see. It's November release date, I think, is interesting. And we'll see. Now, Will Smith as a blue person in a movie that is being murdered online by the critics. Your thoughts on a box office number for the Aladdin?
I wouldn't say murdered. It's
they're all saying the headline on pretty much every review is, it is not the train wreck you were hoping for. It's slightly better than the train wreck you were hoping for.
So that's not murdered. That's like slightly maimed. Because it's, I mean, okay, because it's Aladdin, because it's not getting completely demolished.
Guy Ritchie's getting completely demolished. Well, and Will Smith's getting completely demolished.
Everything I've read is like, he is good, decent to good. He is failed by trappings of the movie, which I can completely see.
They give the genie a love interest, a human love interest that, like, he lost when he became a genie, and his greatest wish is to be free so he can go be with his female counterpart.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you how I feel about it after I see it tonight. If I have to give a number, I'm going to say 70. And I think that'll do.
Be interesting, because Godzilla, King of the Monsters, is tracking at 50. And it's surrounded by Rocketman and Aladdin and all these other things, and it's tracking for 50.
Yeah, Godzilla's not having a good spot.
Well, that was my contention all along, that you could move King of the Monsters. It's been finished for a while. You could move Godzilla, King of the Monsters to March before Endgame and after Captain Marvel, and you could have run for weeks before Endgame came out. And it could have made more money than... Because like, every review, every early reaction to Godzilla is... All that stuff y'all hated about Gareth not, you know, playing peekaboo and not letting you see the monster, you get all the monster porn you could ever want. So you put that, they're calling it the best Godzilla movie, American Godzilla movie ever made. You put that thing in March with no competition around it?
That wins. Because I would go see, I would be willing to go see that in a heartbeat. I'm still going to see this one, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. And your thoughts on the early reactions to Quentin Tarantino running around with his new film, in which apparently Margot Robbie doesn't have much to do except stand around, look sexy as Shannon Tate.
I avoided the reactions. All I saw was, the few that I saw was that it seemed like well received, but I avoided the reactions because I didn't want to know what people thought. I just really want, it's because of the kind of movie this is, it's one that I can avoid stuff and go in knowing nothing and then judging him on it after the fact.
Look, I'm a defender of Hateful Eight, just like I'm a defender of Godzilla, of Gareth's Godzilla. Like, it's not everybody's favorite, but I get what he's trying to do there.
I like Hateful Eight.
And, well, it's a single set movie, and the pacing is really freaking slow.
Yeah.
You don't get true bloodshed until the third act. And then it just...
And then you get a whole lot.
Then you get a whole lot of bloodshed. And so when I read things about pacing in regards to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I'm like... Can't be any slower than Hateful Eight. And with the upbeat, like, groovy 1960s setting, and DiCaprio is, blew my mind, the first DiCaprio role in 4 years.
Oh, wow.
The man won an Oscar and didn't work for 4 years.
I didn't realize it's been that long.
Like, he won the Oscar for Revenant and didn't make another movie. Like, he's been producing through his production company, but he has not actually acted in a movie for 4 years. And it's not like Brad Pitt's all over the place these days either.
Really
not,
yeah.
You know, the most active one in this cast is probably...
It's Robbie.
Robbie. So, like, you have that going for it. It's only the 9th film Tarantino's made in 25 years. I mean, you know, he's maintained forever that once he gets to 10, he's done.
Yeah.
We'll see if that holds. This is the only script in the last 5 movies that hasn't made its way online, or there hasn't been a script reading beforehand for people to hear. He's asking people not to spoil the movie.
I saw that, yeah.
He's done alternate history one other time, and it was to kill Adolf Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And I would not be surprised if you know, Charles Manson meets a similar fate this time, and how he goes about that's going to be interesting, because it looks like Brad Pitt's character, who is DiCaprio's stunt double and best friend, is going to be the one who's going to be tempted by the Manson family. So it's going to be interesting, you know, see how all of these worlds collide. But as far as, like, people being frustrated that, like, Robbie doesn't have a whole lot to do, like, I'm sorry, but when you cast the role of Shannon Tate in a movie set in Hollywood in 1968, like, she's there to die.
Yeah.
Like, you're there to be a sex symbol, because that's what she was portrayed as in almost all of her movies. She was the Raquel Welch of the 1960s. Like, she's there to be sexy and to maybe do some commentary on her innocence as a movie star and finally breaking it big, and, you know, going to the local cinema and saying, "That's me, I'm in the movie." Yeah. Like, playing on that kind of a thing, but I can't see her having a substantial, like, substantive, meaty role that she can sink her teeth into and make an awards play. I mean, she tried that this past year with Mary Queen of Scots, and it went absolutely nowhere. So, I mean, I'll be interested. Tarantino in the summer, you know, for the first time since Django.
Well, no, Django was in...
Django was August, I thought.
It was November or December.
Okay.
I remember, because I was in Houston for the holidays when I saw it.
Be interesting. It'll just be Tarantino in the summer with something that's getting compared favorably to Pulp Fiction as being massive and full of a bunch of threads that have to tie together and tie them together very neatly. We all know he likes his three act structures. You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah.
All right, so that'll about do it for this week's episode. We'd like to thank you for putting up with us not broadcasting a lot since Jim in his interview in our Endgame review podcast. Although, props to the Empire podcast people for going 1 minute longer than the movie with their podcast. We were not able to accomplish a feat nearly as awesome.
No.
But we were able to blow through about a month's worth of movie news in about an hour. So we are quite pleased. We hope you are too, and we hope that you'll continue to like us and follow us and keep up with our content as we move into this very busy summer movie season, because the next thing that is on the horizon is The King of the Monsters. Gosh. A movie that I have been eagerly awaiting since Kong Skull Island came out 3 years ago.
It's been 3 years, wow.
Yeah, and then 3 years ago in March, Brie Larson, before she was cast as Captain Marvel.
That's right, yep.
And then that with Tom Hiddleston and Sam Jackson.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, before that, Garris Godzilla 2014.
It was 2014, yeah.
So, I mean, Legendary gets a lot of crap because they're, you know, a Chinese conglomerate. But, like, to have the fortitude to let a series play out for, by the time Kong vs. Godzilla come out, it'll be 2020. That's five movies over the course of six years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, in today's time, with large gaps between, like, 14 to 17, 14 to 16 with Kong Skull Island and Godzilla, and then 16 to 19, a three-year gap, I think, for Kong to Godzilla. And then now you're going to need a year because you've been shooting Kong versus Godzilla, which gives me hope. It gives me hope that, like, no matter how this box office performs, we're getting
Kong. Oh, yeah, we're getting it, yeah.
So, like, there doesn't have to be an Avengers thing where, like, we're all collectively holding our breath to see if this thing works, to see if we get more.
We're pretty secure in that.
Yeah, and we're going to get the greatest Godzilla movies ever done.
Yeah.
Like, the American version of all the Toho monsters. And it's going to make me happy. Although one thing I did realize when I was watching Detective Pikachu, Toho is a production company on Pikachu.
That makes sense.
So, Japanese.
Yeah.
So, all right. That'll about do it for Chad. I am Brian. Thank you very much, and have a pleasant afternoon.